this is Cindy Martinez, the host of Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. Ever since I was young, I've had a passion for true crime and the paranormal. This podcast focuses on cases and stories from different cities while making the Chicagoland, my hometown, our base. If you find yourself intrigued by crime and all things spooky, find us on Apple, Spotify, and Google. We post new episodes every Friday. Be sure to stop by.
I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today we have Justin Janowitz. Justin was the director of photography in the Unsolved Mysteries, Berkshire's UFO. Justin has a very impressive resume on projects he has worked on over the years, including The German King, A Reckoning, The Wizard, Justice for Vincent, Plastic, plus many, many others. But today we are focusing on Berkshire's UFO. Today is part 5 of my 8-part series on the Berkshires. I did want to focus on the cast and the crew from the people who brought this to TV. So here's my conversation with Justin Janowitz, director of photography for the Berkshire's UFO. Welcome, Justin, to my show today. And I'm thrilled to have you on.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate you inviting me on.
So before we get started on the Berkshire episode, what led you to this line of work, you know, director of photography and films? And
oh, wow. That's the hour-long story to try to condense into 30 seconds, I think. I mean, I guess the easiest way to sort of say it is I've had a love for film since I was a kid. I grew up in New Hampshire, and there was a little rental store, you know, back when we still had rental stores. I'd go there with my mom, you know, as many times a week as I could get her to take me, and always, you know, trying to find the new movies that were coming out. And my mom was a bit of a cinephile too, and she'd introduce me to films, you know, most kids aren't watching, like Casablanca. Just over the course of my childhood, just sort of fell more and more in love with cinema and filmmaking until I was accepted to Ithaca College. So I graduated from Ithaca College with a degree in cinema and photography. And then from there, I moved to LA, and I've been here for 17 years or so, working in the film business, not always as a cinematographer, but, you know, varying, very different jobs inside of the field.
So what would you say, is there a difference between a director of photography and cinematography?
I think different people have different responses. They're pretty universally interchangeable from everything that I've heard and everything that people have told me. And, you know, sometimes people separate it a little bit where, you know, a director of photography is someone that oversees multiple cameras or doesn't actually operate the camera themselves, whereas a cinematographer might be a one camera shoot that they operate. But at the same time, you know, Roger Deakins operates his own camera a lot of the time, and he's the director of photography. So, you know, I think it's pretty interchangeable terminology.
I was looking back on some of your history, and I really enjoyed your answer on what your core was on filmmaking. You know, just simplicity is usually the best.
I've always sort of believed that filmmaking is about storytelling. That's why I got into it, is I love storytelling. And, you know, I think especially when it comes to the filming or, you know, the cinematography of whatever the project is, whether it's a documentary or a narrative or, I mean, even a music video, my goal is always to help tell the story as best as I possibly can and to help the director tell the story that they're trying to tell. And as soon as you get too many things in the way, too many toys that aren't necessary, too many lights, too many anything that distracts from the core of our job, which I do believe is storytelling, that it slows things down and things get in the way. And it becomes less about the story and more about, you know, just putting fancy things up on the screen. So I've always kind of gravitated towards that philosophy of, you know, simplest is usually best. You know, a lot of the people that I sort of look up to as cinematographers, you know, guys like Deakins and Conrad Hall, you know, they really sort of took the naturalistic approach a lot of the time to what they were shooting. And that's kind of how I've gravitated towards filming and what I like to do as part of the craft.
And I see the second part of that core filmmaking was the story always comes first, you know. So, you know, yeah, that would overtake the story with too much toys, you know, too much special effects, maybe, as you know, so to say.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but there was a film that I watched years ago. It's called There Be Dragons. Great film about the Spanish Revolution. It's beautiful. It is stunningly beautiful, and the things that they do with the camera and the lighting in that film are breathtaking. But the problem is, about halfway through, I started noticing that was distracting me from the story. And that's sort of when I really sort of came to that philosophy of, if anything is taking away from the story, then you need to get rid of it, because this is a storytelling medium. And when you distract from that or you take away from that, you're not doing justice to the story that you're trying to tell.
Yeah, and the third part of that core filmmaking was that the filmmaking is a team sport. So I did notice that the three episodes I watched on Unsolved with you and Marcus Clark, the director, do you guys work as a team, or does he call you in for something? I mean, how does that work?
I've known Marcus for about a decade. We've been working together for a long time. We've been friends for a long time. So we're not a team that is hired together. You know, Marcus will be hired on a project as a director. And then if he feels that I'd be the best fit for the project for him as a cinematographer of that film or that project, then he calls me and he brings me in to shoot for him. You know, I've been fortunate. I love working with Marcus. I think he's a brilliant director, and he's a great collaborator. He really knows what he wants, but he's also open to hearing the thoughts of the people that he trusts that he surrounds himself with. So, you know, while we're not a quote unquote team or a package, we do work together a lot, and we have a lot of teammates sort of philosophy on a lot of stuff.
And how did you get the gig for Unsolved Mysteries?
It was Marcus. Marcus was hired to direct episodes of the show. From what I know, he told the production company that he wanted me to be his director of photography for his episodes, and they vetted me and they approved me, and then we were off to the races.
You know, that's one thing that after talking to Tom Reed, you know, Tom Warner and Melanie, that they all said the same thing. They thought he was so professional, and actually the whole team, they said the whole team was so professional and they loved their experience working with you guys.
Oh, that's really nice of them to say that. Thank you.
So, you know, after working with all three, was any one of them stand out more than another that you enjoyed working on? Or
I don't think that anyone stood out more than the other. I think that, you know, one thing that I find so interesting about this episode and just this whole, you know, UFO event of September 1st, 1969, is that, you know, I mean, everyone from Jane Green to Tom Warner, Tom Reed, Melanie Kirchdorfer, they all have their unique story of what happened to them. But there's so many similarities between their stories that's what I sort of found the most interesting, I think, about just the overall project. You know, listening to how each of their individual stories really kind of stood out from the other ones, but also there was this air of similarity between them. So, you know, I mean, hearing Tom Reed talk about being in the car with his family, and then hearing Tom Warner talk about how the beam of light came on him and he was running in place. And I think they're all incredibly memorable stories, but, you know, I don't think that one necessarily stood out above and beyond the other ones.
Are you surprised on how this thing really took off? I mean, the Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. I mean, it was the number one watched miniseries this past summer.
Yes and no. I mean, I grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries, you know, the original series, sort of the 80s and the 90s, and I was a huge fan of it. And it's been this sort of iconic property, you know, almost since its inception. You know, one of the first programs out there to really show mysteries that were unsolved. You know, a lot of the times, I think before that, there was an idea amongst TV makers that, you know, you have to have an end to the story in order for people to be interested in watching what you're watching. And Unsolved came out and put out all these episodes and all these stories of things that had not yet been solved. And then, you know, of course, asked the audience to help out. And over the years, there have been many, many cases that have been solved because of it being on the show, being featured, and then, you know, the audience tuning in. So when the reboot came along, you know, already I was a fan of the property and I knew how iconic the show was. And, you know, just sort of, you see these internet stories about the show's coming back, and the massive amount of people that were just so excited about it, that sort of gave me an inkling that the show was going to be really successful. And then having gone through it and know what we shot and, you know, knowing the people behind it that were going to put it together really well, I was hoping that it would be a nice, big, huge hit, but I don't think that I expected it to be as massively successful as it was.
You did what, work on three of them? I think it was Mystery on the Rooftop, No Ride Home, and The Berkshires UFO. You know, besides Berkshires, I mean, I enjoyed all of them, really, all six. I really enjoyed the No Ride Home. It just, you know, hasn't been solved. And I think that's my next question is, wouldn't it be great that what you're part of can actually solve one of these stories?
That would be the best thing that could possibly happen. You know, I mean, there's really not, I don't think, a whole lot to solve for the Berkshires UFO episode. You know, unless you know, the aliens are going to show up and say, yeah, we were there September 1st. You know, there's not much to do with that one. But both the Mystery on the Rooftop and the No Ride Home, the tragedies that befell these families. And, you know, you hear about these things, and just as a normal person, you say, well, I really hope that they can bring justice or they can find out what happened to that. But then you sit down with them and you meet the family and you sort of develop that personal connection over the days that you're with them. It would make me incredibly happy if they can get to the bottom of what happened, you know, especially the No Ride Home episode with Alonzo Brooks, you know, mm-hmm. his family. They deserve answers. Whoever did this, it really does need to be brought to justice.
We'll be right back with my conversation with Justin Janowitz after these messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
You know, when I was talking to Doug Sackman, who was the art director, he was telling me that there was a plan of actually putting a craft together where, like, they were inside the craft, and they nixed that idea early on.
Oh, I don't know about that. They might have discussed that and then decided to.
You don't have any say over what's put in the final episode?
No, my job is to shoot the episode and, you know, handle the lighting, the cameras, and run that entire department. So, you know, what we do shoot is based on, you know, what the director wants, what the production company wants, what, you know, what everyone thinks the story should be. And then, you know, I mean, as with everything that's shot, there are some things that end up on the cutting room floor. And, you know, I don't know who exactly it is that makes those final decisions, but I'm pretty out of the picture by the time that those decisions are made.
On the next six coming up on Unsolved, are you involved in any of those?
I am. I'm involved in a couple of those, but that's probably all that I can say about it before it premieres on October 19th.
You know, when I reached out to a lot of people when I was doing my research on this, everybody thinks of Robert Stack, you know, because what a great mm-hmm. narrator he was, you know. So how's this going to work without somebody like him? I thought the camera work was just phenomenal, you know, because, you start out with Jane Green, and it just takes you into the story. And, I mean, the cast themselves, you know, they're basically the narrators, but I think the photography was phenomenal.
Thank you. I do. I really appreciate that. We put a lot of time and planning into try to figure out how to, you know, shoot the show in a familiar yet different way, if that makes any sense. You know, because of the fact that there is Robert Stack, who passed away years ago, and there wasn't going to be a narrator. And I think other people involved really wanted to try to make sure that, you know, the show felt familiar to the people who knew it, you know, back when it was playing in the 80s, 90s, I think even into the 2000s. But also make it feel updated a little bit and maybe a little more cinematic with new technologies that we have available to us. So I really hope that your audience members don't miss the narrator too much. But I think that, you know, the directors and the production company, they've done a really good job with telling the stories without really needing a narrator.
That was really surprising. You know, came back on Netflix, you know, and not, you know, like NBC, ABC, CBS.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and again, there's, I can't speak too much to that just because, you know, as I'm not a creator, I'm not a director, but, you know, I do know that Netflix really prides himself on being open to the creative process and to the creators, you know, and I do think that you have a little, probably a little more freedom on a platform like Netflix than you would on your typical kind of broadcast, you know, ABC, CBS kind of station, you know?
Right. When I was doing my research and putting this out to my fellow podcasters that I'm friends with, I have friends in Australia and England sending me their response, you know, so, you know, it really hits home when you find out, you know, people, you know, they're watching it that far away, Japan.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had put something up on, I think, one of my social media accounts when the show had been, you know, the number one program on Netflix in the U.S. for, you know, 5, 6, 7 days, something like that. And a friend of mine in England took a screenshot and he said, it's number one here too. And he sent it to me. And I was like, wow, this is number one. I mean, I can't say across the globe, but it's the amount of people that were tuning in to watch these episodes is really just spectacular.
You know, another thing too, and I put this out there, you know, on Facebook groups and Twitter and Instagrams, I was looking for people that knew anybody maybe back then that seen this or was involved in this any way. And I was really surprised. I got like responses back from people, you know, this happened on the same night, but wasn't in Berkshire, was like in Connecticut and one was in New York. And they didn't want to give their name, but they just wanted to share their experience, you know, and how they did. One of them told me they did call it in, you know, and they were told basically, you know, what were you drinking tonight? You know, so, you know, so I think maybe with these people coming forward and sharing their story, maybe more will come forward that maybe were afraid to speak out all these years.
I hope so too. I hope so too. You know, one thing that's also been interesting is, you know, while we were there actually physically filming the episode, it just so happened that the New York Times put out that article where it said that the Navy pilots had seen this unexplained object. And the video was released, and it's while we were in the middle of shooting this episode, which is kind of crazy timing. And then since then, I think it was July of this year, the New York Times did another article where they talked about the Pentagon saying that, you know, they said they dismantled all these UFO programs, but they were still happening. And there are people who are studying, I think the quote was, you know, either vehicles or objects not from this earth. And, you know, the fact that all these little things kind of keep coming out, I hope that gives the other people that may have experienced something a little more, maybe a little more freedom to come out and share their experiences. And I think the more people that you get sharing what happened to them or what they experienced that night or other nights just provides more information and tries to help us get to the bottom of what this actually is.
I'll be right back with the conclusion after this short message.
Hello, I'm Kayla Knight, the host of Get Grim, a weekly podcast for the miniature folklorist or teller of tales in your life. Each week, I adventure to adapt several tales around a central theme and share them with my audience, along with my own commentary and background on each story. New episodes are released every Saturday, and I can be found on Apple iTunes or on your favorite podcast app.
In 1994, we had an incident in our county, in Trumbull County, Ohio, with UFOs, and it made the Art Bell Show. You know, with that show and also what happened in the county over from mine in 1966, matter of fact, that story went on to create Close Encounters of the Third Kind. With all these stories and with yours on the Berkshires, one thing they all had in common was the craft didn't make any noise. What Melanie was telling me, you know, when you're on that craft, you know, there's no sound. And Tom Warner.
It's amazing. Their stories of what they experienced there.
These things, and this is, you can look up on YouTube, UFOs over Trumbull County. And I know a couple of the police officers at that time, personally, a light shined down on them, no sound, but they had that knocked out their power, their cruiser, no radio signal. And I just thought it was amazing that there's so many similarities in the Portage County incident, the Trumbull County incident, the Berkshires. Did my research on it, and all of a sudden all these people contacted me, you know. how your shows affect people around the world.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think that kind of harkens back a little bit to one of the reasons that I fell in love with filmmaking, is that it is this storytelling medium that, you know, it touches on almost all your senses. You know, of course, obviously not smell, but, you know, you get the sound, you get the picture, you get, you know, the use of music and the use of camera angles, and all that comes together to really impact the audience's viewing experience, you know, or their experience of being told the story. And that's why it's my favorite storytelling medium. That's why I chose to go into this. Just the ability to touch people and either inform or offer them experiences that they may never have another way of seeing or being a part of. It's almost magical.
Well, Justin, I really enjoyed talking to you. What do you have planned for the future?
Well, I have a documentary that I shot that I believe is coming out sometime next year. Other than that, I mean, honestly, this whole COVID thing has really kind of put a damper on our industry. There's not a whole lot happening right now. So I've kind of taken this time to develop some projects, both narrative and in the docu world, that I'd like to investigate a little bit more myself, and putting those together and trying to make those happen. So, you know, trying to take the downtime to turn it into a positive and keep everything moving forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate that.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Justin. I want to thank Justin Janowitz for being my guest today. It was my pleasure to have Justin sharing his experience and knowledge and creativity on his process of filmmaking. I really did enjoy his core of filmmaking, which is a three-part process, really. It's just boils down to simplicity. The story always comes first. It's a team sport. Be sure to come back next week when I will be talking to Marcus Clark, the director of the Berkshire UFOs. And also make sure you go to Apple Podcast, rate, review, and subscribe to Ghosts in the Valley. I'm your host, Dal Cooley, of Ghosts in the Valley.
Podcast Network.